Hi there, and welcome back to Tamsin and Dan Read the Paper. I'm Tamsin Granger.
I'm Dan Abuhoff.
And it's February 26th. I just like to start out, I want to dedicate this broadcast, actually, to Fleur Abuhoff, who was somebody who loved the theater, loved movies, loved reading books. She never heard our podcast, but I think she would have liked it. And in many ways, it kind of replicates kind of conversations we might have with her at the dinner table.
That's true. All right. Well, we will get to theater in just a minute. The first segment, I've been assigned to give a sports report for the first segment. And here's the problem with giving a sports report this time of year. This is the time of year where sports are dead. This is when the Super Bowl is over. This is before the baseball season starts. There are a couple of indoor sports called hockey and basketball, which amuse people to some degree. But it's a lull.
And right, hence the reason for Zowie and Maui.
Exactly where I'm going, once again, anticipated by Ms. Granger. The is it Zowie and Maui or Wowie and Maui?
I don't remember. That was a long time ago. Well, but in other words, it's the Sports Illustrated
The
swimsuit edition.
Exactly. Tamsin's all over. The Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition, which was created to fill this lull. The people in Sports Illustrated noticed that sales were down in early February, because they had no sports to cover, and someone said, what could possibly get our male readership to buy the magazine during this week? And they came up with
women in bathing suits.
Women in bathing suits. Some marketing genius came up with that, and it seems to have worked. So you have the Zowie and Maui issue, but the Times doesn't have that luxury.
No, but you know what the best thing is about that issue?
What?
Is the letters to the editor.
That's true.
Next time around.
It is.
From the nuns in the Catholic schools who would usually say what?
Please cancel my subscription. I am shocked to see a magazine of your stature stooping to this level.
And every year people write in. Every year they publish those.
And every
letters.
Year,
it's kind of funny.
No one tells these nuns that, in fact,
that
they do this
coming.
Every year. Right? It's shocking. But any event. But the Times can't do this. So the Times has to cover sports, or they think they have to. So what do they lead with last Sunday? First four pages of the sports section. Headline, The Ultimate Pursuit in Hunting Sheep. An article on sheep hunting in the New York Times, which is the kind of thing we don't get to read about nearly often enough. It turns out, according to the Times, that permits to hunt bighorn sheep are auctioned for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Really?
This is a huge business and a big sport.
Where does this happen?
In the West somewhere. It says it's west of New Jersey. The quote is, for 100 years, this is Bob Anderson, a hunter. An author. For 100 years, it's been somewhat at the pinnacle of big game hunting, sheep hunting, which caught me by surprise. Maybe it's something you were on top of, Tamsin. I don't know.
No, I know about deer hunting.
No, sheep hunting is big. They have a quote from a fellow who works at a sporting goods store. He's talking about getting licenses or tags. He said, quote, I've had moose tags, but I'll trade all four moose tags for one sheep tag. But it's a rich person sport. Maybe that's why you and I haven't heard about it so much. Otherwise, we know it's. They say some rich people are into yachts or floor tickets to the Lakers. Some sheep hunt.
Okay.
It's just something that we were not aware of.
In the New York Times.
In the New York Times.
You get a lot of people in the Times readership.
I can't say, but the only other thing useful about the article is that they have a description of a gathering, which is called a sheep show. Which gives you an opportunity if ever we misstep later on in the broadcast and someone says, that was a real sheep show, we can say we meant sheep show. So that will get by the FCC centers.
All right, moving right along.
Right.
What else you got?
No, I think now can we talk about
that. Oh, and the New York Times also. Well, this week's New York Times has a big article in the Arts and Leisure section entitled 30 Reasons to Get Up and Get Off the Couch. So, should you be looking for reasons to get off the couch, you might glance at that. It just kind of shows that are coming down the pike. Apparently, there's a Charlie and the Chocolate Factory musical coming along.
Oh, good.
Starring Christian Borle.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, and other fun things. So, it's worth a look.
That's a real cred. Yeah, I think they've revamped the Sunday section a little bit. It looks pretty interesting, but it's a lot of short articles about things coming up in the spring season.
All right, so unlike sports, plenty is going on in the arts.
All right, there's an article this week in the Times headlined, No Relief as Media Obsesses on Trump. And what's funny about that is that's in Thursday's New York Times. In Thursday's New York Times, almost every single article in the newspaper is about
is
Trump.
About Trump.
Okay.
Right.
Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that I'm not even going to count all the articles in the news section that's about Trump.
In the news section. Like every section?
Yeah. In the business section, there are two articles about Trump. In the style section, there's an article about Trump. In the art section, there are two articles about Trump. In the op-ed pages, there is, the op-ed columns, they have four so-called independent columns. Every one of them is about Trump. In the editorials, they have three editorials, short editorials. Each one is about Trump. And yet, the lead section on the Business Day is about obsession on the part of the news media, which closes with the observation, there is no easy way out of this fix. But as big as Mr. Trump is, he's not everything. And it would be nice to find a way for the media ecosystem to recognize that. Well, look, there is one article in the whole paper not about Trump. And that's the article in the Times that notes that there are seven new planets that have been discovered. You'd like to think that there's something going on at least one of those planets that has nothing to do with Donald Trump. And maybe the New York Times can look into it or find some other way to sort of write about something else.
So wake up, New York Times.
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay, what am I doing now? I don't even know.
Yeah.
Oh, food.
Yeah.
Food. You know, it's funny that I always get stuck talking about food, but that is sort of my thing. Anyway, in the magazine section, another great article by Gabrielle Hamilton, who this time is writing about kids and food. And she is urging people not to totally freak out when your kids don't like anything but plain pasta. And she says, my kids did not die from too many meals of plain buttered pasta. And she also mentions that she gets a little bit jumpy. Remember, she's the chef and owner of Prune. And so she's a professional chef, and she's a lot of experience, I think, with people showing up and making various demands in her restaurant for kids who do or don't eat things. But she says she's also a little bit jumpy about making the dinner table some weird proxy outlet for ego trips or power trips. You know, that's the guy who comes in and says, oh, actually, my daughter loves your monkfish liver, etc. And I agree with that. At my shop, every once in a while, somebody would walk in, and I'd be whining about how my kids don't like to eat anything very exotic. And, you know, inevitably somebody would respond, oh, my daughter loves kidneys. We have no problems.
Really? That happened
to her? All right. She said, you know, don't worry about it. No big deal. She's learned to deal with it. And in fact, someday it may turn itself around. You may hear words like she's heard, Mama, I think this is the best swordfish you've ever made. So there is hope. Actually, this is a very good article. The girl can write,
mm-hmm.
Which is not a surprise.
Yeah.
I've read her book, Blood, Bones, and Butter.
Right.
And she actually studied creative writing, I think several different times in several different schools. And there's something about food writing, when it's good. The best is probably, in my mind, M.F.K. Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
But Gabrielle Hamilton, not too shabby.
Yeah, well, this is kind of interesting, though, because it sounds like obsessing about your kids with food is just obsessing about your kids, basically. There's a lot of that going around. But people do.
Yeah, but she knows her stuff.
Yeah.
I'm somewhat relieved that somebody who knows as much about food and cooking, and it has pretty sophisticated taste, is not, has kids.
You had the article also about Tom Colicchio.
Speaking
about
of kids and food,
yeah.
There was a nice article in the Wall Street Journal about Tom Colicchio,
mm-hmm.
Growing up. And
You should probably say who Tom Colicchio is.
Prominent New York chef.
Yeah.
Owned Kraft, all the Kraft restaurants. Mm-hmm. Started Gramercy Tavern with Danny Meyer, and then bowed out later to go on to other things. And We had one of your birthdays at Colicchio and Sons.
Yeah, I
think Colicchio and Sons is no longer with us.
No, he closed it because he got bored. He said he wanted to try something new, even though it was a fantastically successful restaurant.
I think bored is code for not something doing well. Else, but, right, well, you know.
You have the ability to see through these
things. These things have a life cycle.
Yeah, okay.
I think. Anyway, there's a nice article about growing up in Elizabeth, New Jersey, his grandfather's cooking, his mother's cooking, his grandma's cooking, and, you know, some kind of poignant little moments in cooking and food. And I liked, at the end, he brings up his one food wish, and that is when he took home a blueberry pie he baked at his grandmother's house. When he took it home warm to share with his family, he carried it in a brown paper bag and...
Didn't work out. How old was he when he did this?
11.
Yeah, he should have known 11. Better.
Should have known better. Yeah. The berries slurped out of the pie shell.
Yeah.
So that was a nice little window on Tom Colicchio.
Yeah, it's just funny how he got into it. This is the one where he started reading the magazines at the beauty parlor, is that it?
That's right. He was in trouble, and his punishment was to go to the beauty parlor with his mom. And he picked up Cuisine magazine, saw an eggplant recipe he wanted to make for his family, made it for his family. Turned out it was only an appetizer. And so when they finished eating, his mom got up and made the real dinner.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the point is you have to think hard how you punish your kids, because God only knows what's going to happen as a result of that. In this case, I guess it worked out.
Good point.
Yeah. All right, so we have another piece in the Times. And Ellie, by the way, jump in whenever we go off the rails.
That's right. Ellie is here with us.
Hi.
So far, we're 100%. Otherwise, Ellie would have interrupted us and said that. Yeah. But she seems to be rapt attention here. All right, let's see if you can pay attention to this one. This one is about cruise ships.
Oh, this is good. You want to listen to this, Ellie? Because, you know, let's face it, your parents are getting up there.
Oh, my God. Don't say that. Don't say that. We know her parents.
That's
and
okay.
It's her dad's birthday. You want to say happy birthday?
Happy birthday, Dad.
There we go. You got it. 4 million people heard that happy birthday.
You didn't have to say that.
She didn't say anything. 55, I think, is what I heard. 55. Well, that's pretty good, but it's not that old. But, yeah. All right, so putting individual personalities aside, here's something that shocked us. Perhaps some people are onto this. I'm not onto this.
I'm sort of onto it.
All right, well, you're ahead of me. Cruise ships. Cruise ships, we all know about. Cruise ships, they're in some ways...
Have you been on a cruise, Ellie?
I haven't. My mother isn't interested in cruises, but my dad and I have always wanted to take one.
Ellie's picking up right where we left off, not knowing what we're talking about.
Well, this may be the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's the deal. So you think of cruise ships as lavish, it can be extravagant, or at least depending on which cruise ship it is. And certainly celebratory vacation, you know, you're really spending a little extra. It turns out that some people, instead of going to... The idea is you tell the joke before the punchline. That's the way this usually works. So when you deal with assisted living facilities, you think about a subject on the other end of the spectrum, somewhat serious, people getting a little older, and looking to settle down in a place where they don't have to do much in terms of maintenance, and they're given some aid in dealing with other people. Or some people at that age, instead of going to an assisted living facility or an adult community, are going to cruise ships and are just eschewing the notion of a permanent residence or parking themselves at an assisted living facility, but just going on a cruise and spending all their time on a cruise. And you say to yourself, well, that's crazy. Maybe the article is saying that they're going to spend 2 weeks on a cruise and blow all their retirement savings and then, you know, cast care to the winds and impose on their relatives. No. Here's the thing. It doesn't cost any more to spend your life on a cruise ship than it does in an assisted living facility. Yes, that's what it says. There's a study here. There's a study for everything.
And it's a lot more fun.
Well, it depends on the assisted living facility. I mean, yes, and the cruise. But yeah, a 2004 study in the Journal of the American Geriatric Society concluded that 20 years in a retirement home for someone entering at age 65 would cost approximately the same amount as if they spent that time aboard a cruise ship. So instead of spending those 20 years in a facility, you're on a cruise ship.
So obviously, you don't want your grandmother to hear this podcast because she just downsized and moved.
Yeah.
So I mean, she could be on a cruise right now.
It's bizarre. I mean, look, obviously, we're putting medical issues aside, but it's kind of eye-opening. How can that possibly be the case? You haven't thought about it, but if you sort of going over, do you think about the, I don't know, the economies of scale, the idea of putting all these people together, the notion of there's being experts in service, if you will, in terms of food and in terms of accommodations, people being satisfied with smaller accommodations, and just the benefit you have of being out in the sun and cruising around, and that's what gives it all the glamour. So is this really an idea? I don't know, but maybe in sometime in the future we'll be sending away our older relatives on a 10-year cruise or a 15-year cruise. And that's the way you retire.
It makes you wonder why assisted living places aren't more fun.
It does.
That's what I'm wondering. Why are the cruise people, maybe they just have the wrong perspective.
Let's get some cruise people in there to run those assisted living facilities, and they'll have one-way shows out in the evening, and it will be... they'll be dancing or something like that. I don't know. It's certainly something to think about. Go ahead, Tim. You had something about a new drink for us, I think.
Well, part of reading the paper is, finding new and interesting things, and also in the magazine section. And they have a little thing about drinking, about cocktails. Mm-hmm. And so I was reading about... the suggestions this week, which center around aperitivo, which is cocktail hour in Rome, which is a wonderful thought.
Yeah.
A wonderful thought. There they have a recipe for a cocktail, the Perlo, which I don't care about. I don't drink many cocktails, but one of the ingredients is sparkling Italian wine. And it's called Pignoletto Frizzante, okay? And in parentheses after it is never Prosecco. So apparently this is a sparkling Italian wine superior to Prosecco, and only lame people drink Prosecco, apparently.
You're saying that because we drink Prosecco.
I'm a Prosecco drinker.
Right.
So now I have to go somewhere and find out,
Ellie's nodding because she obviously drinks a lot of Prosecco.
Pignoletto Frizzante. Yes.
Yeah.
When I was in Rome for a while, I did drink some other sparkling wines, including a wonderful dry red sparkling wine that I bought at the grocery store. I've never been able to find
it
in the US.
So
that's something. So Pignoletto, look for that. The other thing that's new to me, actually, is a Sufi mystic poet from the 13th century named Rumi. And he sounds quite interesting, and it's kind of extraordinary that we even know about his poetry, but it didn't come to Europe in translation until the 18th century, but Rumi could be the best-selling poet in the U.S., and I've never heard of him.
Yeah, that's shocking.
So that's something to learn about. For me, here's one little line from his 6-book poem, The Magnificent Masnavi. And here it is. The mother is impulsive, the father, noble reason, at first difficult, but finally 100 times easier. In the 13th century. So he intrigues me. So I'm going to try to, this is from a review of a book by Brad Gooch in the Wall Street Journal called Rumi's Secret. So I have to look into that. So one thing we're celebrating this year, 2017, is the 200th anniversary of the bicycle being patented.
I'm doing the math.
By
that's
a fellow.
Happened. I'm working for this.
1817.
Okay,
by
thank
a fellow
you.
In Germany.
Okay, that sounds right. Well,
so
that's,
happy birthday
that's
to
time
the
ago.
Bike.
Okay.
Some people feel that Leonardo.
We saw that exhibit.
Yeah,
we saw that
yeah.
exhibit.
I mean, he made notes. He never built such a thing.
Was that in
but,
Vinci?
You know, he had in Vinci.
Vinci,
the town Vinci, where Leonardo gets. The last part of his name.
Well, we should explain it. The town of Da Vinci has a Leonardo Museum, and the museum demonstrates that Leonardo invented everything.
Everything.
Every single thing.
Everything.
Including
the
fluorescent light bulb.
That
it goes
wrote,
on and on.
He wrote backwards with his left hand.
The electric car.
Just for fun. He didn't. It's not like he was even trying to be that secretive. That's just he could do it, so he did it.
Yeah.
And there are random notes that he does, and they say, ooh, this means he invented the bicycle.
Right.
Ooh, this little thing. that must refer to, you know, such and such.
The refrigerator freezer. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's all in Leonardo's notebooks.
Yeah.
All right. Well, picking up from the bicycle, that's something that is in some ways even more advanced.
Transportation,
cars. So one of the great pleasures of reading the Wall Street Journal on the weekend is to have an excellent writer on cars, a fellow named Dan Neil. And I should tell
you. Dan what?
Neil.
N-E-I-L. Yeah. Okay.
And I'm not interested in cars at all. Let me just get that out there. Not a car guy. But, you know, we drive Supers.
But you read these articles.
Because the guy's a great writer.
And religiously.
And I will, I can't, the first thing I turn to. Let me just read you a little bit. He has an article, he just writes about a different car every week. And this week, it's about the 2017 Ford F-350, the Country Boy's Rolls Royce. It's a pickup truck. And if I'm not interested in cars, I am really not interested in pickup trucks. But let me just read you a little blurb.
No offense to my family, who is pretty interested in pickup trucks.
I don't care if we offend you. That's all right. So here we go. So here's how he begins. I wish I owned the ranch that should come with Ford's F-350 Super Duty Platinum Crew Cab 4x4 pickup. It must be a magnificent spread, a pickup's idea of heaven. Plastic-wrapped bales of grass wait to be hauled from field to pasture. At a half-turn purr, you can stack four of them in the cargo bed. There are Clydesdales to be delivered to wherever Clydesdales are needed. With a 21,000-pound gooseneck trailer rating, our F-350 can pull a loaded 8-horse trailer with enough left over for each horse to have its own blacksmith and personalized anvil. Just a couple, just to round out the picture. Okay, this is one amazing oil burner. 6.7 liters of compression ignition with a variable geometry Garrett turbocharger the size of a bull raccoon snuggled in the engine's V. The reverse flow four-valve cylinder heads are aluminum, battened to a compacted graphite iron block by way of 6 bolts per cylinder. Powered metal conrods, aluminum pistons, 6-bolt mains, dual water jackets per cylinder. At idle, the big diesel ticks slowly and softly, the rhythm of a sailmaker's sewing machine in a faraway loft. And in typical urban traffic, you may occasionally hear the rustling of diesel leaves if you need to gain pace quickly. Otherwise, just a low, throaty hum. Out on the highway, though, if you mat the throttle and open the V8's oil spigots completely, it will make a remarkable and uncanny sound, a sudden barometric dilation of considerable energy, as if a door had been thrown open by a stiff wind.
Be still, my heart. I just say, Rumi, watch out. Okay. It's pure poetry.
It is.
In the world of...
It is. It is.
All right. But before we go further...
Can I just say one thing? Yeah. If Rumi could write like that, we'd all know who he was at this point.
I think a lot of people know who Rumi is. It's just not me. All right? I just, you know, this week's museum tip. Can I give a museum tip?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. I just want to say, for anybody who's wondering... how to go to a museum with kids, okay? Just so you know. This is how you do it. You go to the museum, you go to see one thing, all right? Remember, Metropolitan Museum, free for kids, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay? Sure, I remember right? that. I
and pay that. What you will for parents. So you pick one cool thing that you're going to go in, you see that,
yeah.
Okay? You don't. You know, the one thing you don't want to do is say, okay, today is museum day. We're going to go spend 6 hours in the museum and see everything.
I've had that experience. There. It's a negative experience.
It's a bad thing, yeah. All right? First of all, it's dangerous, you know? It's dangerous because you do that to your kids, their heads are going to explode.
Right.
It's going to be a big mess.
Right.
All right? It's going to, you know, it's not pretty,
yeah.
Okay? Second of all, it's just negative.
Yeah.
Then nobody learns anything in 6 hours, okay? So it's just, you know, it's not effective. Right, so you pick one thing,
right.
One cool thing, like the samurai armor, or this week I would suggest the Native Pacific art. We used to call it primitive, now I think it's native. Unbelievably cool stuff.
Right.
It's if you're going in the museum, it's to the left, behind Greek and Roman. The Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Right.
Carved characters with these big, crazy cartoon eyes. I mean, it's just, it would be humorous to us. It was important to them, but it's great visual stuff. You go in, you look at it, you have fun,
mm-hmm.
You give the kid a dollar, you head to the gift shop, let them pick out a postcard,
mm-hmm.
And then you leave. Boom, boom. leave, get some gelato, play in Central Park, whatever. All right. I understand if you're, only if you're traveling, you're only there for one day, you want to see everything. It just doesn't work.
Right. Now, when you say so this is the way that. To deal with taking your kid to a museum, you really mean this is the way to take your husband to a museum? Is that really what we're saying?
There could be that, but then you can't really head towards the Pacific stuff. You got to head for nudes or something.
Oh my goodness! You're going in that direction. I can see
some appeal, but that's my takeaway this week on museums.
All right,
and then and plus, all kids don't go to all museums. If you're going to go to the Neue Gallery, you've been there.
Yeah.
Kids aren't allowed.
Is that right?
Every once in a while in your life, you want to do something without your kids.
No.
Really? Yes. Yeah. I think so. Oh, I think it's important to grow as a person. Mm. And you bring more back to the kid. Kids aren't allowed. It's beautiful stuff. It's Klimt. You know Klimt,
yes.
Ellie? Yes. Klimt is beautiful stuff. But it's also, there is some off-putting German expressionism, but it also has an exquisite coffee salon, almost like being in Vienna or something. And go there, have a little pastry, a little beautiful cup of coffee, and see some Egon Schiele.
All right, that's it
for museum update. All right.
But now that you've taken us farther and farther down toward base elements, our final article here, The Times, in the middle of the coverage of national and international news during the week, has an article about a local official in Sweden proposing to improve work-life balance and lift the local birth rate by giving municipal employees an hour-long paid break each week to go home and have sex.
So I think this must be what Trump was talking about when he had that speech last week. And he said, have you seen what's going on in Sweden?
He actually...
It wasn't terrorism.
No. They actually mention the article. They mention Trump. They mention Trump in every article. But they mention him here, too, because they say he's been giving Trump a hard time. Not in this. But apparently, this is a serious proposal. I see you're smiling already. Is it this is going to be a joke? But
I'm worried about it, actually. I'm worried about it. How does it work?
Here's the way it works.
How do they track
First of all, let me, it is... Oh, that's the best... I'm going to get to that in just a moment. But first, where it comes from, here's the...
Can I be one of the trackers?
Official who proposes we should encourage procreation. I believe that sex is often in short supply. Everyday life is stressful, and the children are at home. This could be an opportunity for couples to have their own time only for each other. But you raise a good point, because this same person acknowledged that it's very hard to police this. It would be difficult to tell, for example, if an employee given the hour has chewed sex in favor of a walk in the country. So, you're going to have those kind of...
Well, wasn't the original thing that it was supposed to be encouraging employees to get exercise?
It is, well...
Some way to get exercise.
It's two things.
And this is one possible exercise.
It is exercise, but it's, they do say, it's, they describe it as a canny investment in physical activity, and that it will save money because healthier workers cost the government less, the medical benefits aren't as great. And so on. They also have a problem in terms of keeping the population up, which is a serious problem. They talk about the issue in Denmark, and they note that a travel company has introduced a slogan, "Do it for Denmark," is the slogan, encouraging couples to take romantic holidays to procreate, claiming that Danes had 46% more sex while on holiday. I don't know how they measure it or what they're measuring there. But apparently that's the way to do it. You take more vacations than you do it for Denmark, and then they'll be okay. But again, this is controversial. It's not for everybody. They do quote people saying, I don't think it's the employer's business to say, go home and make babies. And they say that, and some proponents worried the proposal was too stingy. There's a quote that he says, I spoke to a couple of older gentlemen who said, 1 hour? That is not enough time. I thought that was a little rough. That's the way they ended the article.
Right.
I think that's plenty of time. But in any event, that's all we have in this week's show. I think we should close with our new slogan, which is, do it for Pennsylvania.
It doesn't have quite the ring. Let's do it. We're working on this.
Do it for New Jersey. Would that be better?
No, it doesn't either. So on that note, we're out.
We're out. And we'll see you next time. Thanks.